Hey everyone, welcome to the Revivalist Family Podcast, where we discuss what God's doing on college campuses and the need for prayer, family, and revival. Hey everyone, welcome back to the Revivalist Family Podcast. I have here with me Angela Lamb.
Hey.
Carol Reynolds.
Woo.
Daniel Grenz.
Hello.
We're doing, the focus today will be, what would you say to your younger self? But we're going to build off of our last one, which was the significance of your college year. So it's somewhat a part two, even though the official theme is, what would you say to your younger self? So this will be a fun one. Angela, you're 41.
I am.
I'm 40. Daniel, you're 37.
Yep.
And Carol, you're 34.
Mm-hmm.
So our focus today will be, what would you say to your younger 20-some-odd self, including college, you know, your 20-year-old, 25, 29-year-old self? Yeah?
Yep. Let me kick it off. Can I kick it off?
Go for it.
Please.
I would say, Carol, you are not fat. You will never look as good as you do when you're 20.
Wow.
And so all these things in your head of comparison, just shut it down.
Shut it down.
I've never thought of that.
Comparison with your younger self.
Oh, yeah. You know, and that's the thing. Every time you look at older photos, you're like, you look great.
What was I thinking?
What the heck? Why was there so much traffic?
Yeah.
So enjoy. Enjoy your body.
That's true.
Have you ever thought of that, Daniel?
I have, because I actually had muscles in college.
Oh, okay. I really can't tell.
Wow.
So yeah, you know, just for girls, shut down the traffic.
Shut down
the traffic.
You are not fat.
I mean, not that I know personally, but I can imagine.
Like, it gets worse from here, guys.
We'll save that for another podcast.
Yeah.
What happens after college to your body?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah. All right. I would say you're not behind. Did you guys ever feel that feeling like everybody else has it figured out? Everybody mm-hmm. else knows what they're doing. People are actually starting to move ahead in their life.
Yeah.
I'm behind somehow. Like,
yeah.
I don't know what I'm doing yet. I'm still trying to figure out which door to go through, but other people are blazing through theirs and just feeling behind.
Like, I feel that now, but I could be your younger self because I'm younger.
You're about 4 years behind.
Yeah, I'm 4 years behind. I think to your point, when you're younger, you always wish you were further.
Yeah.
You always feel like, when I get to be 30, then I'll be there. When I get to be 40, then I'll be there.
Totally.
So real.
And I think when you look back at history, people were doing things a lot younger, you know,
like mm-hmm.
being married at 14.
Yeah.
Like pastoring churches at 25, you know, like there's former generations where they were more advanced in their careers younger for mm-hmm. whatever reason. I don't know if it's the culture or there's just less distraction and options. I don't know what it is, but people were doing things younger in previous generations. And so comparing yourself to that is a tricky slope that you just need to avoid.
Just comparison in general.
Yeah.
Comparison in general.
I feel like so much of your 20s, you're living in comparison
mm-hmm.
to others your age, to others that are ahead of you, and you're feeling all the pressure of that.
Yeah.
And I say with that, that in your 20s, you have such high expectations of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you expect perfection. I know for me, I expected that so that when I didn't quite measure up, it was such a heavy weight.
Huge.
Like for me, it was grades. I mean, I had this expectation of myself, I'm going to get A's. And if I get an A minus, it's just like, oh, the world's coming to an end. Give yourself grace
mm-hmm.
and give others grace.
Yeah.
Like, don't hold people to such a high expectation because that sucks the life out of the moment and out of the relationship.
That's so real. I remember someone told me when I was a young adult in my early 20s that so oftentimes we overestimate what we can do in a year
hmm.
and we underestimate what we can do in 10. And
wow.
I heard that in my early 20s and I wish I really took it to heart, but I felt like in my 20s I was so driven. I felt like my 20s was so mapped out for me from the time I got saved until I went into ministry and grad school and after grad school. I felt like I probably had a decade of my life that I really didn't have a whole lot of wiggle room And my life was pretty framed for me based on my career choices and ministry and church planning and et cetera, et cetera. And I felt like I missed so much of the opportunity to slow down and really like enjoy the Lord, enjoy being 20, not feeling so angsty to get married. I felt such pressure to get married.
So yeah, much pressure.
Like being in ministry single.
Slow that train down.
Gosh. You know, I got married. How old was I?
How old was I when I married you?
I got married at 29?
Uh-oh, this could get tricky.
I was 29.
That was 11 years ago.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for the... Thank you, math major.
11? 12.
12 years ago.
12.
And so did it feel older for you then? Did you guys feel like you were one of the older ones getting married?
People were totally getting hitched in every direction.
24.
Wow. Yeah.
We were in a ministry culture where late 20s is old.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because everyone was getting married at 21, 22. So I got married at 28, and I felt that was so late. I felt like I was waiting for years to get married. But really, in the grand scheme of things, I mean, mm-hmm. I'm so glad I worked out more things mm-hmm. in my 20s, my own salvation,
totally.
Just my own emotional health, dealing with all my baggage. But I felt just so motivated to go and to achieve, and I felt driven.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish I slowed down more to really just do the things that mattered.
I asked my wife this question today. What would you tell your younger self, your college self? And she said, I would tell my younger self, don't date in college. It's like,
whoa,
it's pretty out there. But
we'll have to have her on here and share more about that.
Yes, Carla, please join us.
Yeah. Something a little more serious. I think I would want to tell my younger self that the time you spend with the Lord, the things you do just for the Lord, has a great return. I think I was still new to my faith, you know, in my 20s, and I couldn't really see the connection. Like, it seems like time with Jesus was one thing. And so I think it would have really helped me just to see that your time with the Lord quadruples. The investment you do in your spirit man is beyond what you can imagine, you know?
Gosh,
those quiet times, they matter,
yes,
you know?
They matter. And they're well diggers, you
yeah.
know? Like, we in our 30s and 40s lean on the wealth of fruit we saw with the Lord from those years. Because
mm-hmm.
life gets hard. Life gets really
busy
confusing.
As a mom,
and
family.
There's heartbreaks and there's challenges, and you just have to go back to that well, and that well is there for
mm-hmm.
for us in those yeah. moments.
Yeah. I love one of the things that I've heard Mike Bickle share is that, you know, you do something for 10 years and then you kind of can evaluate. Like, stick with it for 10 years and then evaluate. Because really, what we're experiencing
so
in the Lord in our 30s and even in 40s now is the fruit of things we sowed into that we probably didn't experience fully in our 20s. And if we're not aware of that, we're not experiencing what maybe we think we should, it's easy to give up. But if we realize I'm sowing into 10 years from now, then 10 years down the road, Rick, I'm going to keep sowing into the next decade, the next decade. It gives perspective that I think is really significant when you're younger.
Yeah.
That it's like, it's not a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a long haul.
It's a marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Back to what Carol was saying, I think the significance of what you do in your devotional life in your 20s is so significant. And I felt so busy in my 20s. I was driven, motivated, ambitious, always doing things, and realizing that whoever came up with the idea of, you know, the daily devotion, your quiet time, mm-hmm. your hour of power, I mean, it really, it's so cheesy to say.
Who did invent that?
I don't know, but
who
whoever did,
that?
Thank
Let's
you.
Let's bring it yeah. back.
Because,
it's an hour of
because
power.
Really, I mean, I think about now the wisdom of spending an hour a day with the Lord in your 20s, because as a parent and as someone, you know, who married, husband, ministry, leader, there's just so many pressures all the time. And just to dial down and have undistracted time with the Lord is so rare. But to your point, Daniel, I mean, the wisdom of doing that in your 20s, the fruit of it is massive. I mean,
yeah.
I think I said it earlier, you know, we think that we can do so much in short periods of time. When you're young, you just, mm-hmm. you know, some of it is naivete. Some of it is just we just think more is possible. We're not as connected to reality and how hard things are, but we think that we will know the Lord more and we will have more history in God and we will have more revelation. And so oftentimes it really is, you know, small inches that we move in growth and development. But 10 years later, we look back and like, wow, the Lord did a lot in 10 years, but we thought that would happen in a year.
Right. And I think to expand that idea, when you're younger, you have more capacity both to connect with the Lord. I think the other area that I'm processing is, I would tell my younger self that making friends gets harder.
So real.
Oh, isn't that funny?
Because it's so easy to take for granted the friendships that you have when you're younger, to where you don't value them, you don't fight for them, you deal with confrontation very poorly. Mm-hmm. But I would say to my younger self, like, take the time to go slow, low, to go deep in those friendships.
Yeah. Yes.
Because number one, a lot of those people will stay with you.
Yeah.
Number two, you will learn what it's going to take down the road to have that level of relationship with people.
Yeah. For sure. Especially, the long, long standing relationships.
I think that's so wise, because when you're a young adult, especially on a campus, you're meeting people all the time and you have so many options. You feel like you have so many opportunities to start new friendships, to make friends, and you treat friendships very casually, you know, mm-hmm. and there's almost this reality where it's a buffet style friendship. Mm-hmm. You make friends, you find the ones that you like, the ones that like you. And when it doesn't work out, when you find better, you kind of dispose and flush and move on.
Yeah.
And as a 40-year-old, I've just learned that friendships are really slow to come by at 40. Yeah. You know, even in your 30s. It just takes a lot more to develop those friendships. And not that we can't, because Daniel, we've known each other a year and a half. And I mean, we love you and the Lord's done something in friendship. You know, Reynolds, we've known you guys for 5 years and we feel treasured by, you know, the history we've had. But it's taken, you know, I mean, it's been very intentional. And now I treasure it because I'm like, I don't have a ton of these friendships and I'm really grateful for them. But in my 20s, I feel like I was meeting people every day, every week, and we just didn't treasure it the same way.
So true. Yeah. I think it'd be so rich to have better friends from that season of life, that there really is something where, I don't know, when you spend your 20s together, it would be really rich if we stayed friends through our 30s, through the different seasons of life.
Mm-hmm. One of my friends from college that I helped lead to the Lord now lives across the street from me. Mm-hmm. And we both moved to Kansas City, you know, within a similar time frame. And we've lived so much life together over 20 years, you know, the good and the hard. And I look back with so much gratitude that the friendship has endured.
Yeah.
We've had hard moments, but we've kind of worked through the hard moments and stayed friends. And now we're neighbors, our kids play together. We've done a whole lot of life together here. And I'm so grateful. I mean, that's one out of many. Yeah. And I have many dear friends back in California that we still love. We just don't get to be close and do friendship in a deep, regular way, but we love each other. But I'm grateful that I have one friend that is still a friend, that we still get to be connected.
And it's almost as if it provides a sense of continuity throughout the seasons of life. And I think back to 15 years ago, and there's a few people that I'm still really connected with that I might only see a few times a year, but there's such a foundation of history and relationship that we get together and it's like no time has passed.
It feels like family.
Feels like family. And it helps you find a sense of just rootedness as you walk through different transitions and different relocations, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it'd be worthwhile, if you're listening and you're in your 20s, to examine your friendships. Who are those friends that there's just a connection, and to be intentional, to not let that fall to the wayside.
Really invest in
it. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. And we've talked about this on another podcast earlier. We're going to come back to it, but to be intentional with how you deal with conflict.
Yes.
Because the friendships worth having will face conflict.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so I would tell my younger self, don't view conflict as a sign to break yes. from the relationship, yes. but actually to lean further into it.
All of yeah. us at this table, we've had just, I mean, some of us conflicts with each other, but conflicts with many of our friends that we've had over the years. And oftentimes those conflict moments are the make or break it.
Yeah.
Like you either in that moment, that season of conflict, you really humble yourself, work it out. And if you do, I feel like you're richer for it.
You really are.
All of a sudden these friendships go from a level 3 to a level 5 because yeah. you've gone through the heart together. And sometimes mm-hmm. the heart takes, you know, days, weeks, and months.
Yeah.
But then other times you get to this, you know, relational impasse and this deep hurt, conflict, offense. And it's kind of the beginning of the end of that friendship. Mm-hmm. And you drift apart and you just mm-hmm. don't stay connected. And a year, two, 3 later, you're not friends anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's sad.
What do you guys think about this one? I was thinking about this today. I would tell my younger self, become proficient at risk taking.
But
I'm not sure if that's a big risk taker.
I'm not sure if that's just my personality type. Like I need to push myself to do that.
Yeah.
Where are you on the Enneagram? You don't know.
Somewhere between a 1 and 9.
Okay.
Sorry. Enneagram.
Yeah. Somewhere there.
Wow. Be a proficient risk taker. And what do you think of when you say that?
I was so calculated. Mm. That probably goes back to being a math major.
It's a personality
thing.
Personality, yes.
But I would tell my younger self to not be as calculated, to be okay with making mistakes. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's a better way to say it. Mm-hmm. To try new things and become good at failing. I think Michael Jordan said something like that.
Did he?
Yeah. Sounds like him.
So at this table, you're an ISFJ.
Yes.
Angela, Carol, you guys are ESFPs. Mm-hmm. I'm an ENFP. I remember being 20, and there are certain personalities that really grated on me.
Oh,
there are
yeah.
certain people that just really got under my skin, made me
Quickly.
Feel really insecure.
Yeah.
I would get intimidated by certain personalities, and I honestly wouldn't want to be around those people. I would want to be around people that were like me mm-hmm. or that would affirm me.
What kind yeah. of personality was it?
I can't tell you.
Come on. It was me, wasn't it?
Just kidding. My friend who lives across the street and the one that we've been friends for 20 years, I mean, he honestly really grated on me when we were in college because he was really different, really principled. You know, I think he's an NTJ.
Yes, he is.
And I struggled with just how we related and feeling intimidated. And he was really confident, really sure of himself.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wasn't.
Yeah.
But when I look back, some of the people that had the most impact on me and some of the people that were most influential in my life were the most different.
Yeah.
They weren't
so
the ones
true.
That told me what I wanted yeah. to hear and made me feel good.
Right.
Totally. They were the ones who really got under my
made
skin sometimes and really just spoke truth when I didn't want to hear it and really became these deep, influential friends.
That's so good. We can't just gravitate to the people that are just like us.
Mm-hmm.
We miss out on so much of the sharpening that happens
yeah.
through the grinding, the rubbing.
Yeah. I feel like that makes relationships really one-dimensional too. There's not a lot of, yeah, just the grinding, the iron sharpened iron element isn't quite there as well.
How do you do it though? Because I mean, I think when you're around people that have common interests that are similar, it's natural. It doesn't take a lot of trying. But when someone of the opposite personality, or you know, the ones that just grate you or rub you a certain way, how do you actually grow into a friendship beyond the grating? You know?
Yeah, because
I would just be intentional to actually spend time with them instead of wait until you're kind of together, you know, like for me, those personality friends were part of a group of friends
mm-hmm.
and I wouldn't intentionally spend time with them unless I had to because they were part of the group
mm-hmm.
that I was with. But maybe just not being so passive about it, but actually being intentional and be like, I notice you're different in this way. What is it that motivates you to make decisions so calculatedly?
Mm-hmm.
And do you ever feel like you're missing out because you're being so calculated? Or do you think that you're actually setting yourself up better because you're being calculated?
Mm-hmm.
And trying to understand them
yeah.
versus being like, oh yeah, they're on that end of the spectrum
mm-hmm.
and I'm over here. They don't get me. I don't get them. So they're not going to be one of my people.
Mm-hmm.
But to like stretch yourself beyond to understand and appreciate where they are and how they do things.
Yeah.
It's so good. The value of asking questions.
Not in a judgmental people. Way.
Right. Just because you want to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like pushing aside these biases that we have against different personalities and being, you know, I really want to understand, how does this person process? How do they engage with experiences and seek to know their heart, their thoughts? Not their
thoughts, but... Or what experience?
What are you thinking right now, Daniel?
Just seek...
Tell me everything.
Or even what experiences have built them into that place of rolling in that direction.
Totally.
Like, what is it that made you so calculated? Because my dad was like, take a risk, Angela, just go. And I loved that, but that almost made things more ambiguous for me, because I was like, okay, I can pick anything, but what, you know, just pick something. And it's like, oh. But for you, what made you so calculated?
It's funny because nobody's ever asked me that.
Angela asked all the good questions.
Wow, it's probably because I had such an expectation of perfection that I couldn't fail.
Wow. There really
See,
is.
See, and that brings empathy and understanding. And so now when he's calculated in other situations beyond this podcast, I can be like, I can appreciate where he's coming from for making that decision.
Mm-hmm. There really is an art to asking good questions. Like, I think it really is a learned skill, because some of us are naturally extroverted. We drive conversations. But I think the skill of learning how to actually care and how to actually desire people, you know, and want to be their friend, is the substance of friendship. I mean, it's the intentionality. The other thing I would add to friendship is, you know, beyond wanting to know someone and wanting to get to know who they are and what they're like, is the willingness to be vulnerable.
Yeah.
I feel like no matter what personality you are,
you
know, Daniel, you're near opposite. You know, I'm an ENFP, you're an ISFJ.
Right.
But I think if we're willing to get vulnerable and talk about the hard stuff and talk about the struggle, I mean, it's very easy to really get connected at heart level when you're willing to go there,
to go to the
places where it's mildly uncomfortable and you feel kind of naked.
Right. Because feelings are relatable. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And I and an E can relate to the same feeling.
Even if you're
feeling,
really cognitive, like, you can relate to the struggle.
Yeah.
And everybody desires... Everybody wants to be known in their struggle.
Yeah.
Everybody has a desire to be drawn out as who they are. You know, there may be layers to get past and to work through in a relationship, but I mean, most people, when you ask a question, it does something to them that says, tells them you matter. You matter to me.
Yeah. So good. If I can contribute one more on a different topic, something I would say to my younger self is be fiscally wise.
Is that financially?
Yes. Sorry. Okay, I'll say it again. Be financially wise.
That's a good word, Ty.
Because I didn't grow up in a family where my parents really sat me down and taught me how to save, how to plan, how to budget.
Mm-hmm.
And I went to college, and first day at college, I'm filling out a form and getting a free credit card.
Mm-hmm.
That was not free.
Yeah. Come on.
Not free. Free money. It was a free t-shirt. The whole lot of interest later on.
Was the t-shirt worth it?
No.
Never.
It didn't even fit right.
They never fit.
It was a cheapy Gildan style.
That's awful.
If you have a Gildan t-shirt, praise
you
God.
You still have that t-shirt?
No.
Oh, good.
I've burned
We're
it.
Burning
I'm just
that
kidding.
One if you haven't yet.
But just going through college and feeling like, I'll take out another student loan.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so casual about student loans that I'm still paying off. And I went to a public state school. I didn't go to, you know, Stanford, Berkeley. It was a great education school, but it was still a public school. And I think even then my tuition was something like $4,500 a year.
Wait, did you just say you didn't go to Stanford or Berkeley?
Stanford or Harvard.
I was going to say, I thought you went to Berkeley.
Sorry. You might want to say that again.
Go Bears.
I went to Berkeley, go Bears, not Stanford. Boo Stanford. Just
no,
kidding.
Come on.
Just kidding.
But love the Redwoods.
The Redwoods.
Aren't they Redwoods?
No, they're Cardinals.
Oh, my bad.
But their logo is
they're
a tree.
They're red.
That was pretty funny. But I just went through college very, very spendy and just casual about, I'll sign on the dotted line and get another $4,000 loan, you know, so I don't have to work as much. And then through my 20s, I just was casual and bought a car on credit. I've made choices without thinking about the consequence on my 20s and the debt I would accrue and how much we would spend to get out of debt. And then just the reality of really planning for marriage and planning to buy a home and so many things that I kind of thought, oh, that's down the road. We'll figure it out.
Right.
I wish that I did Dave Ramsey when I was 22.
Yeah.
19.
Yes. 12. No, 18.
12. Yes. Come on.
I wish I learned, you know, at a younger year, how to be fiscally wise, how to be wise in giving, how to be wise in saving, how to be wise in just the disciplines of spending and living by a budget.
Mm-hmm. So how would you have done that? How would you have gone about being fiscally wise?
I think half of it is having training. Is I mean, you know, I love Dave Ramsey. There's other opportunities, you know, Crown Ministries, different things. But just having just biblical framework and having some tools.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like budgeting is something that we've had to learn excruciatingly through marriage. And that's a hard time to learn it when you're married with kids and trying to figure out, like, how much can we spend? And if you do it as a young person, you know, in your 20s, you learn the disciplines of spending within a budget. And when you don't have it in your budget, you don't spend. And you don't just put on your credit card or go and take out a loan to buy a car that you can't afford.
And that even ties into what where we started with this idea of having a vision for a decade out.
Yes.
Whether it's spiritually, relationally, financially.
Yes. Because you really are laying foundations. Yeah. You know, like if you look at your 20s as a decade where you can lay foundations spiritually, in emotional health, in financial health, you're going to come into marriage with that much more to give, with that less baggage, literal baggage if you have debt. And we've spent a good part of our marriage just getting out of debt. And then just the reality that you'll have that much more to give, both emotionally give, financially give, in terms of spiritual history in the Lord.
Yeah, I'll throw one more out there before we end. And I think it ties into all of these, but I would tell my younger self, find fathers and mothers in every season of life.
Yes.
Even as you're talking about financial wisdom, I'm like, man, I wish I had approached people and invited people into that area, or spiritual development or conflict resolution, but finding people have walked through, they've done the struggle, they've bore the cost in their own lives that, that you can lean into in every season.
Yeah, when I look back at my 20s, I am who I am today because of about three men in my life that I, that three men that were intentional to invest in me and ones I was willing to open up my life and heart to. Yeah. And I look back and my view on both spirituality, my views on family, my views on children and discipleship and so many levels was shaped by men in my life that I was willing to be vulnerable with in the struggle, and ones that really loved me enough to invest in me, to really speak truth and love, and really sometimes to tell me when I was really off base and foolish. Yeah. And, you know, no one wants to hear that, that you're wrong or that you're making poor choices, but just the fact that someone cared enough to do that and then me willing to actually listen even when it grated, even when I didn't want to hear.
Yeah. I think my last thing would be, I mean, I think it's only within the last few years that I'm learning how to work through conflict and friendship. I think I grew up in a culture where you sweep things under the rug.
Stuff.
You forgive and you forget, you know? But I think later on in life, I learned actually things bottle up. That's not healthy. So I think I would have wished that I was more honest with my feelings and even have practiced being honest in friendship, in hurt and in pain. I think it would have served me a long way.
I think for me, and I love what you guys are sharing. If you're like me, you can't see 10 years out, and that's just mind-boggling. So for those of you who are like me, pick a year. What would you want to be in a year? If you can't see 10, what do you want in a year? But I think one last thing I would add is to really find out who you really are versus who you think your friends want you to be, who you think your family wants you to be,
the leaders want you to be,
your church leaders want you to
be. That's so good.
Like, there's so much potential for you to be this and this, and then you just kind of buy into that. But there's a lot of time that I wasted trying to be something for other people, and it took a long time to undo all of that expectation and setup for myself, and even just confusion of like, well, if I'm supposed to be this, then I should be doing this. And I never really stopped and thought, do I want to be that? Is that really who I am? Can I even be that? I would totally go back and just say, you do you, boo-boo.
That's my life.
And like really, really be honest and like, am I really this person that I'm kind of projecting? Am I really wanting to be what is expected of me? And I'm not saying like totally shed everything, and but just look inside and ask the Lord, who did you make me to be? And is this where I'm at? Like, is this where I'm supposed to be? And am I being true to who you actually made me to be versus what I think people want me to be?
Even what you think God wants you to be.
Yeah.
Because sometimes we project expectation.
Totally.
And we don't ask him the question.
Yeah.
Who do you want me to be in this season?
That's so true. I remember being in college and being like, oh my gosh, what if I don't want to be a missionary? Is that even allowed? You know, just the shock and concept of not being what I felt like I was supposed to be. So anyway, yeah, even that.
So good. Mm-hmm. I love it. So many great nuggets, so many great wrestles. We have probably a dozen great ideas for future podcasts just from this one episode. But I love what you ended on, Angela, just being comfortable in your own skin.
Yeah.
You know, just
that's what your 20s are about.
Okay with who you are and who you're not.
Yeah.
Thank you guys for being a part of today's podcast. What a fun podcast. I don't know about you guys listening, but we're having a lot of fun here. And so hopefully you guys are enjoying this as much as we are. Bless you guys. We'll see you guys at the next Revivalist Family podcast.